Rams, their second year in existence, have won MLS Cup.
Ojo con la alto, wings.
If after a final, we're sorry, Brad.
Oh my God. So sorry. We have a lot to apologize for.
Oops, our bad. Well, also, you're welcome. No, wait, we're bad.
Actually,
it's us.
I'm just kidding. My hot take is that actually everything that I said on the last show is, I still believe. I will say, though.
Oh, yeah, totally.
I will say, though, you know, it's funny because just judging, we haven't really talked specifically about what we're going to talk about in the show. Although I do see a show sheet with some questions, some topics and things we discuss. And it's funny. I listened back to the show that we did last week after the New England game. I feel like everyone was despondent and sad and frustrated and angry after that game. And then we went on a podcast and basically were like, that was great. One of the best games we've seen this team play in a long time. We were very, very positive outside of the goalkeeping position, of course. And then in this game, I feel like there was a lot of kind of not happiness, I guess, but you know, people were happy to at least get the result that LA United got with the 0-0 draw against LAFC yesterday. But I don't think we're going to be so happy about what we saw. And it would, funnily enough, it's around Bragg. It still kind of revolves around Bragg Zan, the result in both of these two games.
Like diametrically opposed.
Yes.
Yeah. And like what happened. It's a weird one to kind of go into, because there is this feeling of like, okay, road point against the best team in the league. You take that, especially when the best team in the league is clear across the country. You know,
no doubt.
Take that in a vacuum for sure. Especially considering that they didn't rotate. They rotated a little bit, not that much. That was pretty much LAFC except for a couple of positions. You know, you had homegrown in the midfield, I believe, and a younger or a newer guy at center back, but the rest of the team, pretty full strength for the most part. You didn't have Vela start, but that's about as scary as they get. You know, full credit to them for coming off a really pretty bad performance overall in the CCL final, where they totally didn't live up to expectations, but they came out and played really well, and it didn't matter because Brad Guzan had the best goalkeeping performance in Atlanta United history. I can't remember many better.
Maybe.
I mean, looking at the stats, I mean, you have 8 saves and you have the post shot XG of like 1.2, right? But that doesn't count the fact that he did save a penalty.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, he cheated a little bit to do it. But if that goes in, it still counts. You know, even if he's off his line early. So, you know, you can throw that in there.
He did save the penalty. Yeah, he just had to save one again. And then, of course, Bill Zest. Exactly.
And then
got in his head.
So
maybe Alakan had a better game, but I mean, I think it was the best. Yeah. It was statistically for sure the most impressive performance from Guzan in an Atlanta United shirt, maybe in his career too. I don't really know much about his career before Atlanta United other than some of the teams he played on. But yeah, I mean, it was great. And I love to see it, by the way. You know, I'm sure. Well, I don't want to presume what anybody else thinks about me or us or what we said on the show last night, but like, I genuinely want him to do well. Like, I like him a lot. And I will say, it's not like totally surprising to see him of all people come back in this way and respond, because he is such a competitor, you know, like, and you know that he is his harshest critic, and he would be the one who would, if there was anybody who could come back from a game like he had, it would be someone like Brad Guzan. So more power to him, man. I hope it continues. Again, I have my skepticism that it will. Here's one other thing I want to say about this performance that he had, is that I think it's easier. So he had a save relatively early on in the first half. It was a shot from pretty deep, and it kind of came right at him. It bounced, so it was a little awkward. But he kind of, it was very awkward. He spilled it to the side when it seemed like an easy one to catch. It was, again, it was kind of right at him. And it had me worried, but I think that shot and, you know, some of the other actions that he had in that first half that were savable, he wasn't having to do anything super crazy. He was making himself big at times for some nice moments. I think those kinds of things get you into the game. And I think that as opposed to the New England game, where it was all Atlanta United all game long, and he only had these, you know, few sporadic moments where the ball was coming his way. And I think it's harder to react. You're just, as a goalkeeper, you're just not kind of as into it, you know, as opposed to last night where he was basically involved the entire game. And you could almost see him hit like a flow state, basically, toward got to the point in the second half where it just felt like anything that came his way, he was going to be reacting to and saving. So credit to him.
Yeah, no, he didn't really have a chance to shut off at any point, did he? Which, I mean, good on him for handling all of that, all of the stuff that got thrown at him, and good on him for responding in the way that he did. Joe, I want to talk about what happened Monday, because I wasn't gonna talk about this until he came out last night and did what he did, but I think it's somewhat instructive, and it's at least engaging from a narrative perspective, because, you know, you mentioned we don't want to be critical. I mean, we have to be, right? We want every Atlanta United player to be having the best season of their lives and doing great and all this kind of things, because that's more fun for us. We're not in this to be negative, but when things go poorly, we have to ask questions. We have to look at it through a critical lens. It's just part of the job and part of the nature of what we do. So on Monday, Brad Guzan speaks to media in Marietta at the training ground, right? This was a scheduled thing. And to be blunt, it was awkward. It was intense. It was kind of excruciating for someone like me who does not enjoy conflict.
Yeah, yeah.
That is not my strength as a reporter.
Yeah.
You know? Look, I mean, Doug asked the first question in this presser, and he just starts it by asking, okay, what happened on that first goal against New England? The one where Guzan obviously gives the ball right to Carlos Yeo. Easy goal, first 30 seconds. Guzan looks at him and says, what do you think happened? And then there is a silence. And it either lasted a few seconds or I aged about 20 years in that period. I'm not sure. And no one said anything.
Yeah. And then Guzan, I wish I was here for this,
mumbled, bad pass. And then we were on to the next question. It was about 3 minutes. Normally these kind of pressers, I mean, you usually get like 18 minutes, 8 to 10 minutes with a player. Mm-hmm. You know, so 3 whole minutes. I asked one question. I asked, how do you recover mentally after a bad game like that? And, you know, I don't think that's unfair at all. Mm-hmm. I don't think any of these questions were unfair.
I don't think it is either.
You know?
Uh-huh.
And Guzan said, get on with it. The game goes on. It's not the first time I've made a mistake. It won't be the last time. You get on with it. And that was the answer.
Yeah.
You know? And that is not, I'm not here to say that's like unprofessional. I'm not here to say that he is wrong in any way for responding like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm just here to say that it was intense, and you could explicitly see the body language and everything else. It was a moment where there was clear frustration, clear just not really wanting to be answering those questions, understandably.
Yeah.
And I think that becomes really, really interesting when put into the context of last night, because I think if I make any mistake in front of anybody, I am wallowing in it. I am dealing with it. I am stuck in the mud for a little while.
No doubt.
Guzan,
me too,
makes mistakes in front of tens of thousands of people. And when he says, you just get on with it, I believe him.
Yeah.
I think that is how his mentality works. I think to some extent, like, not to get too like narrative-y in it, but I think to some extent that fueled him this week, you know, and
for
provided
sure
some motivation.
For
and,
sure.
And, you know, I think that shows the difference between someone like him and someone like me who blogs from his house. So
I
really, really have a ton of respect for what he did last night and for that moment in particular, because it's like Joseph in a lot of ways last year, where no one's mad at him. No one is upset with him, but everyone kind of understands that his body is not doing the things that he is asking it to do.
Mm-hmm.
And in this case, it's because Guzan is 38 and coming off an Achilles tear and coming off an MCL tear, you know?
Yeah.
And this is what has defined his entire life as being a goalkeeper, right? And so when those things start to fail, hell yeah, you're going to be frustrated. Hell yeah, you're going to wake up a little angry and not wanting to talk to Doug. I wake up not wanting to talk to Doug. Kidding. I always love talking to Doug.
That's too funny.
But, I mean, to me, I found that extremely interesting.
Yeah.
And again, I have a lot of respect for it. But to your point, probably one of the last times we see a performance like that.
Yeah, probably. I would love to get like a psychologist's like analysis of this kind of athlete mindset and how different it is and how it's like kind of, it's not like psychotic, but like they're just like wired different than me and you and most of the people listening to this show. You know, it's like they've got something inside of them that drives them and that allows them to move on from failures. And those are typically the better athletes are the ones who are able to do that. It's the ones that carry that stuff around and let them bring them down that I think are the ones who are not as successful typically in sports. You gonna say something?
Oh, I mean, I'm totally. Well, I mean, I just think about my own non-existent athletic career, but I had a relative amount of talent as a baseball player, you know, but when I threw a ball, I got sad. You know, I never ever had the mentality of like, oh, okay, well, you know, it's just you just move on and you throw a strike the next time. And I was like, oh no.
Did you ever have the experience?
My life is crumbling.
Yeah, as like a little leaguer when you make the last out of the game, and it's like, oh my god, it's all my fault. Like,
to be fair to me, I was a really damn good little leaguer.
Okay.
Let's not undersell it here. But in high school, for sure, you know, like that kind of level where, you know, it got a little more intense. So it was like, okay.
Well that's how, that's how I felt as a not very much good baseball player. When I made the last out, it was like a whole thing. It was bad.
I mean, it's a whole thing for me at this point if I like make a typo.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Just built different. It is all I want to kind of say about it.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. But you know what's interesting is the way you describe this interaction and just this kind of observation of Brad in this moment. You know who it reminds me of? Reminds me of Carlos.
Interesting.
And I do.
I like that a lot, actually.
And I do think that they are kind of cut from the same cloth in terms of like their on-field demeanor. When, you know, Carlos Bocanegra was the United States captain. Like, he was tenacious. He was made the most out of his abilities in terms of what he was able to accomplish in his career, playing for Fulham, playing for, was it Rangers, I think, you know, playing in France, all these different clubs, you know, just having a really successful career. We could have a longer conversation about how this mentality kind of translates to being an executive at a team as opposed to maybe like a coach or a player, obviously. But I just see a lot of similarities, and I think that that's probably one of the reasons why Carlos, first of all, wanted to bring Brad into the team and, you know, has signed him to the contracts that he has and all that stuff.
I'm going to respond to your rhetorical with another rhetorical.
Okay.
Because you know who that doesn't remind me of? Garth Lagerwey.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, we're talking about a guy who constantly jokes about being the lowest MLS draft pick to ever play in MLS.
Right. Yeah.
A guy who was like totally just, I don't want to call it like messing around. He obviously took his job seriously when he was a goalkeeper,
sure.
But it was never like that intense. And, you know, in conversations I've had with him before, he's kind of, you know, talked about some of the chip on the shoulder attitudes he's seen from players before and been like, well, you know, that's just not, that's not what needs to be done. That's not how it needs to like be projected to the public, right? In a public facing way. So but really, really interesting to think about those dynamics.
Yeah. I mean, and you even think about some of the, you know, best athletes in their sports, at least, you know, I'm just thinking of from my generations, like they're all kind of crazy. They're all kind of psychos, you know, Tom Brady, Tiger Woods, Michael Jordan, like all these people have like something that drives them that is like almost like outside of my sphere of comprehension. Like, I don't even, I can't even understand what that would feel like to be driven in that way and by the things that do motivate them and push them forward. So, and I think also for coaches, you know, soccer coaches, like I've heard this a long time ago, it's like some of the best coaches of all times are just, they're insane people. Like they're like, they're not like us, you know, like they're not kind of like normal civilized people because they're in their bubble all the time throughout their entire careers doing this one specific thing. And that's what they're good at.
We had a very similar conversation when Gabby came.
Yeah.
About like, oh, he's a weirdo. Hell yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Which ended up being, it was too far to an extreme.
Yeah.
You know, but I still stand by a lot of that to what you're saying right there. And, you know, I do want to point out that Gonzalo has that in him as well. It just doesn't manifest in some of the same ways. He's told me before about his schedule. You know, he's like, yeah, I was at the training ground from like 8 to 8. You know, and stuff like that. And it's like, okay, you do have that in you. You just aren't maybe as intense about it when you're interacting with folks. I don't know. God, we got Brad sent us on like this like metaphysical right. journey yeah, here. Yeah, but,
anyway, scoreless draw.
Yeah, 0-0. It was interesting. And I hope that folks come away with a lot of respect for this game in particular and remember it well, because it was engaging to me in the way that like you kind of hope sports are, you know, in a way that like, okay, there's an arc from point A to point B and you can see how it got there, and it was up and down and very human in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
And I liked that. What I didn't like, Joe Patrick, was the performance of 99% of the other right, parts of the team.
Yeah, it was,
and we can talk
brutal.
About that now, I think.
Oh my gosh, it was so bad. It was so bad. I feel like Atlanta really just struggles against teams that are able to come out and press them like LAFC was. Like, I think I've kind of whispered this to you in the press box, just like whenever teams come out and are playing against them, It's specifically when they come out enough to be pressing Atlanta's center backs and then they have to play it back to Brad Guzan, and then he kind of plays it out, you know, to like a kind of a lofted ball to a fullback, and then things kind of get helter skelter and there's inevitably a wayward pass that gets intercepted, and then they're conceding a chance on the other end of it.
And here's what's really starting to drive me crazy about that. This game almost broke me. Like, this was the one where I was like, okay, I'm really gonna like just lose it, because there were professional soccer players not completing 5-yard passes.
Yeah,
in the system, it wasn't like the tactical setup or whatever. It doesn't matter if you're not completing 5-yard passes and just making the simple connections. And there were so many points last night where they were struggling to do exactly that. And what's even more frustrating about it is it wasn't the six this time. Like, we've been on like right. Franco Ibarra and the central part of the build up for a while, and it wasn't him mm-hmm. for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mm-hmm. it was every now and then center backs would make a mistake playing the ball forward into those pockets of space in front of them, and that was whatever. But mm-hmm. I mean, you get the ball out on the flank at this point for Atlanta United, and everyone has realized that if you make your pressing trigger the flank with the fullbacks yeah. against Atlanta United, you're going to feast.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not going to work.
Yeah. Yeah, you're
it's
right.
It's either that, and I'm sorry I'm like already in like rant.
No, please.
It's either that, right? Or you force Franco Ibarra to keep playing the ball backwards, even though he generally wants to progress the ball. You force him to do that because you know that Mateus Asetu is not going to make himself available for
right.
any
right.
moment right. to progress the ball.
Right.
He's not going to be there. He is a passenger. Joe Patrick, he doesn't
I'm
do
so glad
anything.
I'm so glad you brought this up. There were multiple times last night where he received the ball and it was like LAFC knew that he didn't want to play it forward. So they were still like pressing, like kind of latched on or like basically behind him, like kind of latched on to the center backs where they knew that he wanted to go with the ball. And then he was like kind of freaking out. And like, it was like they were daring him to push the ball forward. And he utterly refused to do so. It's so weird that Franco Ibarra is the number six and also the team's more progressive passer between he and Rosetto. And it's
not
been
only that,
two worrying performances in a row from Rosetto.
He's actively finding the ball in a way that Asetu just yeah. like does not.
Yeah.
Does not. And then he's having to do the work defensively, you know?
Yeah.
And again, it feels like, you know, I thought Thiago Almada was bad.
I did too.
Last night. But at the same time, him and Ibarra are both having to make up for this big gap in midfield. And it feels... Hold on one second. Well, Rylan, stop. The dog was... Whatever.
Everything's going haywire.
Anyway.
Well,
everyone's having to make up for it.
Yeah. Go ahead. Let me go on a rant now. Luis Araujo, I looked at the stats after the game, and I feel like there's like a... At least on the FotMob app, it was like erroneous. Erroneous on all counts. They had him at zero times dispossessed, which is definitely... not true, because I was literally witnessing him lose the ball like time and time again. And he was, I actually let out like an angry tweet, which I don't typically do, but like he was looked like he was just like playing out there for fun, like trying to like, you know, nutmeg opponents, which I mean, he does that, but he just didn't look like he gave a single care in the world if he were to not be successful, which he was not more often than not. And just the way he was so kind of, he was just kind of, it was like he was like kind of just playing his own game and just kind of roaming. And it was just terribly frustrating to watch. There were some moments where he had opportunities. He had space to really drive at the opponent and create something. And he would kind of meander about and take way too much time to the point where the opportunity that he had was suffocated. And it was just really frustrating in this game to see Atlanta's attacking players play as poorly as they did, because you almost felt bad because Guzan was under so much pressure. It was like they owed him like some moments, some chances to go the other way and at least threaten LAFC, and it just never came. I mean, this team had four shots in the game, and two of those were like in the very final minutes, like in stoppage time, basically. So, man, it was as bad as I've seen this team look with the ball.
I also fired off an angry tweet about Luis, and I tried to kind of like, I didn't want it to just be too extra online,
mm-hmm.
but the central thesis of it is, what is the plan? What is the plan, Luis?
Yeah, exactly.
What is the plan when you get the ball and take off into four people?
Exactly.
What do you expect? And it's the same thing we've been saying for forever, which is that there's just a lack of understanding of why and how good things happen in soccer games. Mm-hmm. And it is infuriating. I think Araujo has surpassed Ezequiel Barco and just like, what are you thinking?
Well,
you know, yeah.
I kind of jokingly put out a tweet when Caleb Wiley came on later in the game. It's like the best player is coming. The Atlanta United's best player is coming onto the field now. And it's not like Caleb Wiley. I mean, he's technical and a good player, has physical traits, obviously, but it's not like he's anything out of this world. But he does more of those things that you're talking about, like the things that create good moments. And understands and executes those things, which are relatively simple. Like, you know, like they're mm-hmm. like they're, if you have a basic understanding, then you can accomplish them. And he does them better than a, you know, designated player like Luis Araujo, team is spending tons of money on.
Atlanta's best chance last night came when he ran him behind to the primary assist zone and mm-hmm. played a cutback,
mm-hmm.
which is like the central theme of what Gonzalo Pineda's game model mm-hmm. is in possession.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like the only one doing it.
Mm-hmm. And he had to make a run off the ball to do that. Like he had to mm-hmm. make a run without the ball, hoping that he would get it, which he did. And if players like Luis would have done that more often, then maybe they could also create as many chances as Caleb Wiley seems to. If there's mm-hmm. a reason why it seems like the team creates a lot of chances when Caleb Wiley's playing, this is it. It's because he just does these things within a certain structure that some of these other players just don't.
And the thing is, I don't think Derek was bad last night.
I don't either.
You know, some folks may fight me on that, but I thought a lot of Atlanta's best moments came through Derek,
mm-hmm.
at least in that first part of the game.
Yeah, he had a nice like flick to Gutman to put him in for into the primary assist zone.
That got scuffed.
Like a little 1-2
where he played the ball into Almada near the top of the box. It was a really good play, and that got scuffed. There were just a few moments where just, you know, he's doing the right things, and then it didn't work out, right? Mm-hmm. And then he has the one really bad giveaway right before he gets sent off, just to like really hammer home the confirmation bias on some people. It's kind of amazing how he does that.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. But when he, I was actually surprised he came off, because if it were me, I would have put Tyler Wolf on for Luis Araujo. I thought he was that bad. Mm-hmm. Like I thought he was, it's hard between him and Rizzetto, but those two I thought were Atlanta's worst players in the game. Which again, the stats, at least my app doesn't back up, but
that's given a good amount of credit to the fullbacks who were just
that's true, yeah,
not good in possession. Brooks Lennon got caught out of position a ton of times. I thought it just was not making good choices. There was one moment, Joe, I lost my mind. He is standing in the box. The ball like cycles out to an LAFC player standing outside of the 18, mm-hmm. and he turned his back to him. And I lost my mind. He turned around. What? I don't know what was supposed to happen there. It kind of seemed like he was maybe just like turning around to yell at someone to go out to the person. But why? It was bad.
There was a period in the second half where it just seemed like LAFC was running at Atlanta's left side and like had runners coming in over and over and over again. It was this bogus guy.
I mean, did you see the chart of LAFC's attacking path, essentially?
No.
At the end of the first half, 64% of LAFC's attack was going down the left wing.
Yeah.
Like not like the left side.
Right.
Like it wasn't including like the half space, the central, or that channel right there.
Wow. Yeah.
It was the left wing. They were going right at him.
It's weird because I've always thought of Gutman as like a, and maybe it's not solely.
I'm sorry. This was Lennon's side.
I mean, this is Lennon's side. Okay. LAFC's. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Yeah. But these fullback, like, I don't know. Yeah. It was weird.
It's not great defensively. And I am concerned that Andrew Gutman is trying too hard to be normal. If that makes sense. He did all these things last year that were very interesting, at the very least. He would end up as like a second striker. He would be involved in the attack in numerous ways.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to ask about it on Friday, but he's not doing that stuff anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's not being as engaged, and he's, you know, he's actively trying to be involved in the buildup because Atlanta needs that, right? But not very good at it so far.
Yeah.
You know, there have been a lot of mistakes, a lot of giveaways on that side. And then he gets put in situations where he's defending going on one, and that continues to be a pretty noticeable deficiency in his game. And he's kind of stopped doing the things that made him interesting and effective. It's really weird.
Yeah. He was making those crazy underlaps, which, to your point, oftentimes it was like, turn, not even underlap, it was like him kind of floating all the way into the middle of the field and doing all this crazy stuff, which was great because it breaks the opponent's structure and it creates disorganization for the opponent. You do have to have, you know, a structure in place on your side to make sure that you can cover for the space that he vacates. But yeah, it is interesting. It does seem like he's playing in a bit of a different kind of style, or maybe has some different directives, so that would be good to learn about. I do want to say, whatever I say about player ranting about players in this game, take with a grain of salt, because this game was played like, you know, 12 hours ago, and honestly it was such like a excruciating watch. I can't say that I was like fully
hyper engaged.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But it was worrying to see just like how many opportunities LAFC was getting down the wings. And again, you know, a huge portion of that is down to Atlanta's failings offensively, just turning the ball over. They gave the ball away to LAFC interceptions 8 times in the first half. And I know like that probably doesn't seem, you know, interceptions isn't a stat that you often hear talked about, but to be intercepted 8 times in one half, like most teams will have around 8 interceptions, sometimes less, sometimes more. But like that's typically like a full game's worth. Atlanta United had 7 interceptions, for example, last night over the whole 90 minutes. So it was just really bad in the buildup. And I think a huge portion of that's down to Rizzetto. A huge portion of that is down to some Juanjo Perata, who I think also is a target for teams to press and hassle when he's on the ball. So I'm just interested. I wonder if there will be any changes because of what Gonzalo Pineda may or may not have seen out of this game. I certainly would make some changes. I would play Sadich instead of Rosetto, first of all.
Yeah, first I'll do that. Maybe even consider Ajani. I'm like giving it a shot. I don't know at this point.
I thought he was actually pretty promising in the game last night.
Yeah, so he got in a great position for that.
I felt so bad that he didn't finish that.
That would have been amazing.
Yeah.
But it's understandable.
Yeah.
You know, that's a tough spot.
By the way, on Luis, it looked like he went down with an injury at right before he came off. Like he was going to be coming off anyway, and then he was kind of down with an injury. I do wonder now if we see him anymore. I could kind of, I don't want to say he's faking it.
We do have a question about this later.
Like when you know you have a transfer coming and you want to be extra careful with your body before you go to the team, I think that he will be hesitant to put himself back on the field if he does have something.
You got to wonder. There's only about 16 more days left of Eruzu's time in Atlanta. And, you know, fortunately, that means that the transfer window is on the way and hopefully reinforcements are on the way soon, because the personnel's it's the same drum we've been beating for a while.
Now at this point, we talked about it after the last game, but at this point I would just put transfers aside. I would play Etienne and Caleb Wiley at the wings.
Mm-hmm.
Which says a lot about Araujo right now.
Again, I know that Inter-Miami game wasn't fun for anybody because of Joseph, but the structure of that in possession ended up looking really, really nice. And I'm interested to see that potentially develop while Luis Araujo is gone. That's my thought.
Yeah, definitely.
My thought right now, Joe Patrick, is to get to a quick break.
Oh, boy. All right. Everybody knows that everybody who listens to the show knows that we are presented by Lucid FC. That is Lucid Footwear and Clothing. It's been a great partner for us for few years now, so really thank them for their support of the show. They have a store that's open in Buckhead by appointment and walk-ins, 1 to 8 p.m. daily. It's located at 3209 Paces Ferry Place, so definitely check them out. But if you don't want to check them out in person, you can also visit their website, which is how most of us do our shopping nowadays. It's at lucidfc.us. You can get on that little website and look around and check to see what they've got. I mean, they've got all kinds of clothes, kind of European streetwear inspired stuff. So if that's your jam, definitely check them out. LucidFC.us. When you go to the website and you do buy something, use code DSS as your you get free shipping within the United States. And we're still waiting to see on the continental United States if that's a thing. But if we have any Hawaiian or Alaskan listeners, let us know. If you're a diehard, Lenny and I are diehards listening to Five Stripe Vinyl. But yeah, use DSS as your free code, or as your code for free shipping at lucidfc.us.
Joe, we also got to mention the Patreon, patreon.com/5stripevinyl, because we didn't mention the beginning of the show.
That's right.
We also got to mention that Kurt Castle is on the intro of the song is Chances. Go check that out wherever you get music. Kurt Castle. Thanks, Kurt. All right, let's get to these. John Leach, 16, asked the same question that he asked last week. How much of that result was entirely on Brad? And we can say this time that it was entirely on Brad. Again.
Yeah.
But for good.
Yeah, right, exactly.
But for good.
It was like the inverse. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
It was great.
Ralph asked why he didn't go to bed. I don't know, Ralph. Make better life choices. Ty Quinn says, is Wiley our best winger? And I think, Joe, you kind of hit at it. He's the one actively doing the things that create good soccer results right now.
Mm-hmm.
You framed it better than I did, but that was the gist.
Well, I mean, you set it up because it's like he's a player who has an understanding of what is required for good things to happen on the soccer field. And I think that comes a lot, you know, a lot of that is down to the coaching that he's received throughout his life. It's not like, you know, Gonzalo Pineda just instills this in him when he becomes a pro. You know, it's like it's been ingrained in him through, you know, he's been in a high class at Atlanta United Academy now for a long time. So credit to all the coaches that he's had up to this point that have gotten him to this level, and it's going to help him throughout his career.
I got a question that I want to spin off that. What do you think of the criticism that Gonzalo Pineda hasn't developed anybody, quote unquote?
It's not on a first team coach. It's not their job to develop someone necessarily. It's their job to put them in a position to succeed. Mm-hmm. And through that success, I think players do progress a lot. I don't put anything into that.
Yeah, me neither. And at the same time, I mean, you look at Caleb, who was found a place. You look at Ibarra getting better now that he's actually playing in the right position, which, by the way, I wrote a whole thing about that on thestriker.com. Go check that out. And basically the summation of that is, we were playing Ibarra as an eight, which, real quick, can I like tangent?
Yeah, please.
It was super interesting on Monday. I asked Gonzalo Pineda if Ibarra was playing out of position last year. He's playing more as an eight. And of course, College Brook Necker has the five strike final famous quote of, well, we see him more as an eight, correcting Felipe Cardenas in a press conference last year. And all of us went, what? That's bad. And Gonzalo, go back and watch the press conference. It's very funny because he like laughs as I'm asking the question, kind of has this smirk on his face. And he says, well, that's very interesting. And then goes on to explain that when he got to Atlanta, he was told Ibarra was an eight. And everyone was telling him that Ibarra was an eight. And, you know, you can kind of see the thought process there of like, okay, this guy wins the ball back. He can be a person who controls the press, et cetera, et cetera. But obviously, we know from watching him for a while that he didn't have the mobility. He doesn't have those instincts. And on top of that, he's played a six his whole life.
Yeah,
he told us that at the beginning of the year. He's like, yeah, I'm way more comfortable as a six because that's where I grew up playing.
Yeah,
you know? So for me, man, what a total indictment of the scouting department in a lot of ways for Gonzalo to not like bluntly say it, but be like, yeah, I got told that. And that was probably not right.
Yeah. So you just a... let people in behind the curtain. You sent me, you DM'd me the quote from Gonzalo after he said it, because I think you were just so shocked or whatever it was. And I said, you know, full credit to Carlos Bocanegra for signing Franco Ibarra, and all credit revoked for not knowing why. Like, like they got a good player, but they didn't know what position he played, basically.
Yeah.
What so role he should play.
I mean, it took like a year to realize. It took a year, 2 years to realize that. I just don't. Odd. I get, again, the central thesis behind it, but clearly it wasn't effective. And Ibarra has been way better since playing as a six.
Yeah.
And if we're talking about development, I guess, eventually putting him in the right position and letting him kind of succeed, that's part of it.
Yeah.
So I'm going to give some credit to that.
To your question about, you know, is Gonzalo Pineda responsible for development? What would you say to... I see this on Twitter, like Pineda's system is boring or it's bad or it's just. What would you say about people who kind of criticize the quote unquote Pineda system, especially after a game like last night?
There's only so much you can do.
Right. Exactly.
As a manager. Now, it goes back to a lot of the conversations that we've been having, but the game model is not designed to be boring. The game model is, you know, be high possession, be in control of the game, work the ball forward. He's talked about it before. He's been frustrated with how indirect the team has been at times, especially last year when they just wouldn't play the ball forward, but Ibarra kind of fixes some of that, you know. There aren't supposed to be these massive gaps and everything like that. And again, I think a lot of it comes down to the personnel just, one, not executing. Like, it doesn't matter what the tactics and the game model are if you don't make simple passes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and two, I mean, Mateus is at.
Exactly. I mean, to someone who wants to criticize Gonzalo Pineda's, like, quote unquote system, which I don't think is the greatest word to use for just like managers, game models, as you put it. It's like it was not, well, whatever it is, it was not executed by the players who were on the field last night. So there's that. And, you know, the countering point might be like, well, it's his job to make sure the players can carry out his system. And maybe in a more open league where you can sign more players that you want that cost certain amounts of money, you can do that. But Gonzalo Pineda is in a position where he's kind of working with square pegs and round holes to an extent. And over time, I think, I believe, and I think you believe this too, that they're going to be able to sign players that allow this game model to flourish more and more. And we do see it happen here and then, but I think the more players you can get in, and again, players is the key word, then it's going to result have better results.
It's not that different of a setup from what LAFC does.
Right, right.
Steve Trundolo isn't a tactical genius, but when LAFC played in the CONCACAF Champions League final on Sunday, they had five damn players on the bench who would be starters for Atlanta United. That is not a joke. I mean, I counted five. It was Ryan Hollingshead. Mahalo Poku was part of that. Ryan Hollingshead would start at Brooklyn, and Mahalo Poku would definitely start at wing. A few other guys in midfield. Stipe Buick would start at wing. Jose Cifuentes would absolutely be the first person on the team sheet at Atlanta United.
He was great
on the bench.
Yeah.
A few guys. I mean, the talent disparity is crazy.
Yeah. You
know?
Yeah.
So, I don't know. We're back to the manager discussion again.
I know.
It is what it is. It is what it is. We just got to keep reminding people, I guess.
And remind people that Atlanta's still eating so much salary. Like, they're still just like, they're still eating the crap sandwich, you know?
Garth would call them inefficient contracts. Inefficient contracts. Cinco Reyes says, given our midfield deficiencies, what sort of formation or other tactical change could help in theory? And I know the real answer is, quote unquote, get better players. But until then, I mean, in theory, you kind of have to wonder if there is another game model that would be more conducive to allowing this particular group of players to succeed. But I don't know. You kind of have to stick with your principles and build something, you know, over time. Like, you could, in theory, turn into this like deep sitting counter attacking team that's boring and plays with structure and squeaks out, you know, draws and everything like that. But that's not what anyone is asking for. And it's not what's going to make this team wholly effective contender when the time comes when they have the actual players to execute.
Yeah, I said last night, and again, this is kind of players, but like what this team really lacks to me is a press resistant, you know, central midfielder who can stave off you know, pressure on his back and then be able to find a way to turn and push the team forward. I mean, it's not the first, we both talked about it in many previous episodes, but that's the one thing that Mateus Brazetto doesn't provide. So when you don't have a player like that, I guess, okay, so I guess if I were to say what, like, tactical change, maybe it would be playing Thiago Almada in a deeper role where he can be that guy, because he's probably the most press resistant player that you have. He's not the big, obviously he's like probably one your smallest player physically, and so that means he can only withstand so much in terms of like the challenges that he would face in that position. But at least he would give you some semblance of control in midfield, where then you could, you know, play, you know, players like Caleb Wiley, like Tyler Wolf, who have a basic fundamental understanding of and kind of humility of making the runs and doing the things that you need to do to score goals. So that would probably be my answer to that question. But it's just an area of the team that really needs filling right now.
Agreed. There continues to just be a big gap between midfield and the front three. Like, you saw it a few times.
And it's falling on Franco Ibarra to basically be that progressive creative force from his holding midfield position.
I pulled the touch numbers, by the way, from last night. And Ibarra was second with 71 touches. And then you go all the way down to Mateus Asetu with 46.
Wow.
And that's just not, that's a big margin that shouldn't exist.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what he's doing, because he's not providing anything defensively either.
Right. Right.
Anyway. Man of Fact says, at what point is playing Luis Araujo on the right, when he won't be here in 16 days, an actual detriment to the team? We're close.
Yeah.
We're close to that, I think. Bring him off the bench. I would play Derek over there and see if you can build on that structure.
Yeah, I was going to say, I pretty much hit my breaking point with it last night. I mean, you play Luis Araujo on the right wing when he's helping the team, you know, and makes the team more effective. But that was not the case last night, for sure. And again, I think that the fact that he went down with the injury before he went out of the game, to me, that signals that he probably won't play again. But we'll see. But yeah, I'm with you, Sam. I would play other players in that position at this point.
And just to remind everybody, that Inter-Miami game I'm talking about, they ended up in like a 2-3-5, essentially in possession, with the fullbacks pushed up, Etienne kind of tucked in, Wiley kind of tucked in as well. And that was a really solid structure, especially for what I think Gonzalo Pineda's game model is. It's very typical among some of the best teams in Europe and everything like that. And it's the first time we've really kind of seen that balance, I think, in Atlanta United in a long time. So if they can put forward a similar performance with that structure going forward, I'm really, really intrigued by it. Mm-hmm. Just want to remind folks on that.
Mm-hmm.
Tony says, could you see any reason why Tyler decided to not shoot during the final minutes? Did we not want to take any shots at the 18-yard box? Yeah, it could have been a team-wide thing where they said, no, let's just not shoot. Or it could have just been, he's just a baby child. That's okay. That's okay. He'll learn.
My answer to this is that he has not been playing a lot lately. And so just when you haven't been playing, you're not in a flow. You're not in a rhythm with your teammates. I think one, it makes you a little bit deferential to the players around you because you are like, it's hard to like step into a team and then be the one who's kind of like taking the critical shot. You know, like you kind of want to be the person who's providing and be kind of humble in that way. So I think it's largely down to that. It's just down to lack of cohesion and mainly just a lack of feeling like he's the one who should be, you know, taking that critical opportunity.
Folks in general just kind of love to try the cutback too.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I think less folks should do that.
Yeah.
That's my hot soccer take of the
day. Try to walk it in.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the problem with the Arsenal.
Too many defenders are onto that. They're onto it. Pineda Head 17 says, when Luis leaves, would the best attacking group include Caleb at left wing and Wolf at right wing? Is that the case even now? Guys, I don't think I'm starting Tyler over Derek. I'm just not.
I get it,
but I'm just not.
The idea of starting Tyler Wolf is not nearly... how does this go? It would not work out as well as you think if he were to start from the beginning. I think a lot of the reasons why he's able to make such an impact is because he comes on with those fresh legs in like the 70th minute and is really able to make a difference in that way, physically. Just move his body around, be mobile, and put himself in positions where I don't think he would be getting if he was kind of on level par with the opponents in terms of just the energy of having started from the beginning of the game. So I would rather take the more experienced, more technical Etienne as the starter with Caleb at left wing, by the way. And then I think Tyler's playing well as a sub. So if it becomes undeniable, that's when you make that move.
Right. And we're not there yet.
Yeah.
We're not there yet. And he's doing well in that substitute role. Let him keep building off that. Vijalba says, this team seems to be playing with a general malaise and lack of sharpness. Is there any chance that a number of the regular starters are simply holding on for the summer window, given the impending moves with LA and possibly Thiago Almada? I think to some extent there's that possibility. I think in general, there's a lot of folks on this team who probably lack confidence in some of their teammates.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's generally apparent. And maybe not even the sense of like, oh, my teammate doesn't have like the soccer ability. It's sometimes just more about like, oh, I don't think they're going to be in the right position to cover for me when I do this run or when I make this movement or when I attempt this thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think there's the general negative feedback loop with some of those players. And that, in theory, improves when you get better players in and everyone's confidence improves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It actually reminds me of, I was up at Falcons OTAs yesterday and we're talking to Jake Matthews, cause they've got all these like young players on the offense for the Falcons. And he's talking about, he's like, it all just comes down to trust. It doesn't matter how old they are necessarily. It just matters whether their teammates can trust them to do their jobs. And I think even more so in soccer, because it's a lot more dynamic movements, players kind of fluidly moving throughout the field. You just have to have that confidence that your teammates are going to be able to kind of hold up their end of the bargain as well in terms of whatever it is you're trying to execute on the field. I think, I don't know how much I buy into this, the theory that it's the game didn't go great because you got the summer window on the horizon. Like the team played great against New England. You know, I think it was just one of those games where things were not going well on the field. You had the, obviously a lot of travel. You're playing against a really good team too. We got to, you know, should credit LAFC at some point in the show. But yeah, I wouldn't put a lot into that. Although I understand where it comes from, of course.
Yeah, I think you framed that better than me. GoJD says, why was Taylor Twellman yelling at me so much after midnight on a weeknight, Joe? I can't say anything without getting fired, but you can probably guess my thoughts on that.
I feel like Taylor Twellman is, it's like he's really trying to sell the game. And some of the, like, I loved his call, unfortunate for us that it was New England who scored it, but you know, I thought his call was like raw and emotional and great against New England when the team played against New England, both Miguel Berry's and Carlos Heels at the end. But yeah, it was like, it was a lot. It seemed kind of extra last night. He was like talking about how great of a game it was and everything, and maybe it did feel like a great game from an LA's perspective, but yeah, it was a lot of yelling. I agree, it was a little much.
When every take is presented as the most important take in the history of takes, none of the takes are important.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, that's a good point. And certainly advice, you are not referencing Taylor Twellman.
No. You're advice just talking for young broadcasters in general, yes, and sports writers, yes, and everyone involved in the sports media ecosystem. I can say that because I teach journalism.
It is true, though. And just generally, when you're communicating, you want to accentuate the things that are actually important, but not overdo that.
I can't say anything. But basically, if you're like as fired up about, like, I don't know, I can't say anything. Tony says, what cap rules were created when they signed Messi? Any speculation on what we can expect for other teams? I think that's a bit, this question is asked a bit facetiously because there are no new cap rules because Inter Miami has signed Messi, but at least we finally got to a question about Messi 50 minutes in. Joe, the best soccer player of all time is going to be in MLS.
Yeah, it's kind of surreal. Always hoped it would happen. To be perfectly honest, never thought it would actually materialize. Still not completely final yet, but obviously it looks like it's getting there, and it's just amazing. I think it's going to be incredible for the league. A lot of people really crap on, like, kind of like, it's almost the David Beckham thing that happened with LA. Obviously, a lot of people kind of crap on the league for obviously kind of creating the designated player rule at that time, and kind of just making it possible for LA to bring him in, which was a little bit unfair to other teams. Perfectly justifiable criticism. But that move was really important for the league. It really did push the league forward, both in the eyes of the world and just pushing the league forward as an entity itself. And I think that this is going to be that on steroids, because we have a population that's more interested in soccer than what was the case when David Beckham came into the league. So I just think that all the positive things that happened through that move are going to be accentuated by this one. And also the thing that I think people kind of give the Beckham move grief about is that, like, oh, well, you just signed this like celebrity who came, but wasn't very good. David Beckham was very good in MLS, probably one of the better at
won multiple championships.
Yeah. Won multiple championships and was instrumental in those LA Galaxy teams winning those championships. So I expect Messi to also be extremely good and to make highlight reels. And I think it's just going to really, really help the league.
If you are worried about the competitive imbalance of this, I have great news. Inter Miami's terrible. They have the most losses in the league. They are last in expected goals for. They are last in expected goals against. They are last in expected goal differential. They are last in goals added differential. They are starting some teenagers and an emergency signing in midfield right now. As good as the greatest soccer player of all time is, even at this age, He's only going to have 12 games to carry this team out at the very, very bottom of the league, and I don't know if he's going to do it.
Did you see, I retweeted something that John Mueller retweeted from somebody who I don't know who it is, but he quoted Jason Christ, 2014, yes. Said, I strongly believe that you could take Messi, put him on the worst team in MLS, and they'd still be the worst team in MLS. So we're going to test that theory.
We're going to put that thing like in the perfect scenario. It's kind of amazing. That's total scientifically perfect study. I can't wait.
Mm-hmm.
I can't
mm-hmm.
wait. Look, it's going to be one of those things where, you know, the roster isn't going to stay the same for Miami. They're going to bring in more folks besides Messi, I think. You know, I don't know how much cap room they actually have. But as is right now, it's going to be a heck of an ask. Potentially Tata too, whom I love and respect dearly. And, you know, I think he'll improve some things, but maybe not everything about that organization, which still has wildly underperformed in every single conceivable way until about like 24 hours ago, you know,
mm-hmm.
This is the first time they've lived up to expectations. Mm-hmm. So it does come at a perfect time. I think you kind of mentioned it for the sport in this country and in this league, in the ramp up to 2026, it feels serendipitous in a lot of ways to have him be here, to really kind of stoke that interest and to just get people in stadiums and see that, okay, that the selling point here of this league is the atmospheres inside the stadium. This is different than anything else I'm getting in professional sports mm-hmm. in this country. And folks are going to see that if they haven't already.
Yeah.
You know, and man, if you, I have a buddy who was quietly buying up tickets to Inter Miami games
mm-hmm.
On the road over the last few weeks. And, when I say that he is making money, I mean he has already made thousands of dollars.
Holy cow. Yeah.
Thousands.
I saw.
So, I mean,
my I have a supporter section ticket for Mercedes-Benz Stadium, and I went up to look at it yesterday. So I was like, if I sold this, what would it go for? And the recommended price that they had me, that they suggested that I sell my ticket for, which I think the face value is like $30 or something like that, whatever, it's mm-hmm. the cheapest season ticket you can get, they recommended me sell it for $344.
So no, we don't even know if he's going to play,
right? I know, exactly. So that, but it just shows the I mean, I think the interest is real. By the way, I don't think those tickets, well, I mean, I'm sure some of them are selling, especially ones in Miami, but I don't know how much they're actually, I've seen like the ticket price charts online, like for Mercedes-Benz Stadium, because they're going to open up this whole stadium, of course, for that game. I don't know how much of those tickets are actually selling for, that are being listed for that high, but that's what they're at least being listed at. But it just goes to show, you know, the fact that the team is now opening up the entire stadium for this game, that's so much more revenue for Atlanta United for that game. It's going to be more revenue for every team across MLS that Messi goes to. It's just, that's, you know, again, just another way it's going to help boost the league. And by the way, while we've been podcasting here today, I've been DMing with Felipe to get him on. So hopefully we'll be able to talk to him about some of this stuff relatively soon, because he's been reporting on it and I'm interested to get his take on it. But I'm also curious, just from an inside baseball perspective, how this might affect media, because there's no way in hell they're just doing like open locker room, like with Lionel Messi in there. And I'm sure Miami's going to have to really button down like who's getting credentialed for games because of it.
Yeah. That's fascinating. I mean, all of it's fascinating. All of it's fascinating. Again, you know, to the question that Tony's asking, what cap rules were created when they signed Messi? None yet. But yeah. You talk about that extra gate revenue. You talk about the extra eyeballs. You talk about the extra everything that goes back into the single entity structure. And potentially, you know, this is a signing that could lead to them being like, okay, we have the revenue and the interest right now to expand who teams can sign and how they can sign them and make these teams stronger. It's a jumping off point for everything positive that this league could be in the future.
Can I ask you a question? Like, theoretically, the team could sign Messi without a rule change. Like, I mean, as far
totally.
As I know,
yeah.
That is just, you know, a designated player.
Right. What's unique about the situation right now is that the Athletic is reporting that the Apple and Adidas, which the are partners stake. With MLS,
right. Okay.
are providing some sort of compensation, essentially,
right.
for
right.
Messi. So clearly playing by just, different rules,
mm-hmm. yeah.
you know, and it looks the optics of that after Paul McDonough being banned for life or whatever, and the sanctions right, yeah. for having 5 DPs and all that kind of stuff, bouncing back and being like, well, actually, it's okay if you do this, on its face, not great. In context, though, shut up. Like, sit back and enjoy it, and don't take it quite that seriously. I understand where the criticism comes from, but again, one, you don't really even have to worry about Inter Miami making the playoffs all that much this year, because they're going to have 12 whole games to get him not only installed, but he's going to have to like double their point total to get them to like 42 points, which is the play-in game line. Essentially, like the goal is for Messi to get them to ninth place.
This is a very unique circumstance for Messi. He's probably never played on a team like this in his life, honestly.
Oh, my God. I mean, look, he's playing with, like, Benjamin Kamaski now. Yeah. Like, this is a different world. Dixon Arroyo.
Imagine being, like, the first team, second team Ivy League player defender on that team who's, like, now going up against Messi in training.
And you know what? Messi's probably going to realize real quickly, like everyone else has, that the level is sharper than a lot of folks expect.
I joke about that, but like he's going to get kicked and stuff, you know?
Oh, absolutely. Exactly. People are going to want to prove themselves. Franco Ibarra, man. I'm just kind of envisioning a not so gentle tackle.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. Man.
All right.
I can't even imagine it's hard to believe that that's actually going to happen. We're going to see Franco Ibarra tackle Messi, probably, maybe.
In theory.
Hopefully.
Yeah. All right, man. Well, let's get out of here. Game against DC United on Saturday. We'll have something up for y'all probably sometime Monday on that. Go check out the Patreon, patreon.com/5stripefinal.
Where I will be talking to Rob Usry tomorrow. We'll post something. We're just going to have one of our little chats there. That'll be for all patrons, though. And then next week, we'll hopefully have, I'd like to get Felipe, but we'll have another guest for next week for patrons. So make sure you check that out. patreon.com/5stripefinal.
Good work, Joe. Good work at DSS as well. Go check out DSLsoccer.com. Go check out Joe on 90.9. The game, I heard him do a news flash yesterday, and he got to Messi like third. For some reason, like Chris Paul came ahead of Messi. I don't understand what happened there, Joe Patrick, but that's okay.
It's not in order. Okay. It's not in order of importance.
and check out thestriker.com. I write words.
Yeah.
About Atlanta United.
Doing it better than anybody else, in my opinion.
Thanks and blessings. All right, Joe Patrick, let's get out of here. Bye, y'all.
Bye.